Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's lynda.com/know-how. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code know-how. On this episode of Know-How, Brian's going to teach you how to make a brand new watch face for your Moto 360. I'm taking you through segment 2 of our upgrade project. Oh, and bash, bash, bash. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we... Did you just abandon that intro?
Yeah, I did.
Well, we bend, break, and upgrade, and all those other things. I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Brian Burnett, and clearly Padre is on top of his game today.
It's one of these days. It's definitely one of these days. Now folks, we have been in the middle of a project with this Acer Predator here. We've been showing you how to upgrade individual bits and pieces, right?
Right. I think we were supposed to send it back about 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Months.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm in love with it.
Yeah, we've been gaming a lot with it. So in just a bit, we're going to show you the next part. Last time we upgraded memory, this time we're going to upgrade the video card to maybe give you some info on what you should be spending your hard-earned dollars on the next time you want to upgrade. But before we get there, there's a kind of a new story circulating right now about a new vulnerability.
Yeah, and this has to do with Bash?
Bash. Now, Bash, as we know, it's a command shell. It's a command interpreter for Linux and for Unix operating systems. So it's used in all variants of Linux. It's used in Mac OS X. It's an incredibly powerful thing that you can use if you know a little bit. It's like command shell for Windows.
Okay. And it's widespread.
It's super widespread because it is so powerful. It allows you to bypass the user interface, all the pretty click, bright color things, and just instead say, no, just do this.
Right.
Anyone who's used Windows and has copied files from one directory to another in a command shell and then done it in the operating system and realized how much slower it is understands a little bit of how powerful Bash can be. I mean, it lets you reach in and touch every part of an operating system.
Right. And I've always read those stories about, like, the hardcore guys who are like, oh, I don't need a UI. I'm just going to type this all
right, out. Right. Yeah. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It just means that they know all the commands that they need to make something work. In fact, if you're working with a Raspberry Pi, you kind of have to know that, right?
Yes.
Because most of the time, you're not going to have that pretty UI.
Definitely.
Well, so that's good. Bash is good. I think we're in agreement that Bash is fun. It's powerful.
Sounds pretty neat.
There's a problem with it.
What?
Yeah.
And this just came out?
This just came out. Just this last day, it broke that some researchers over at Red Hat were poking around with Bash, and they realized there's a fundamental problem. There's a fundamental exploitability in Bash.
How long has Bash been around for, then?
Since 1989. It's been around for a long time. And what they've and this is one of these things where now you look at it and you go, wow, why didn't we see that? No one tried this before?
That's crazy.
Or it could just be one of these things that some people knew about and they never told the rest of the world. Essentially, if you append a bunch of stuff to the end of a Bash command, you can make it execute a script, and you can make it execute a script remotely, which means you could make it execute a script over the internet.
Wow.
Which means that someone could take complete and total control of your computer, even if they're not sitting in front of it.
That's kind of scary.
It's kind of scary, right? Remember we talked about Heartbleed not too long ago.
Right.
And that was scary because, it allowed people to spy on your communications.
Right.
And if you want to know what Heartbleed was, just go back a couple of episodes and know how. It's like, 20 weeks ago or so that we were able to show you exactly how Heartbleed worked. That was scary. And at the time, We thought that was the worst exploit that had ever been discovered because it was so pervasive. In fact, there are web servers right now that are still being affected. It affected over 500,000 web servers, and now maybe 70% of those have been patched.
Right.
So it's still affecting people. This has the potential to affect hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of computers and devices.
Oof. And is there a patch or anything out for this?
There's kind of a patch. Some researchers who are now really hammering on the problem aren't sure how effective those patches are.
Wow, so this is fundamental.
So imagine this. It's not just your laptop. I mean, if you've got the latest version of Mac OS X, I think you're fine. They're hammering on the patch that they integrated right now to make sure it actually works. But you're probably okay. If you were using an old version of, say, Mavericks, you're probably not okay.
I mean, yeah, okay.
Which is still a lot of computers, right?
There's quite a few I can think of off the top of my head that are still running Snow Leopard or something like that.
But think about how many devices this affects. It's not just your Mac. It's Linux.
Right.
And how many millions of installations of Linux exist in data centers around the world.
Right.
And how many devices, like those integrated devices, remember the Hue light bulbs that we had on before you buy?
They use that.
It's Linux.
Oh, right, Linux.
It's all Linux, right. And Dropcam is using a version of Linux. There's a lot of alarm systems and temperature controls and irrigation systems and lighting systems that are all using a Linux kernel. They all have the ability to be exploited with this bash exploit.
All right, I'm closing the computer. I'm going to go not touch the internet ever again.
I think we're done. It's bad. It's bad. Now, researchers are working on it, but people shouldn't panic.
So the exploit is that they can remotely take over. Someone could remotely take over your computer, but how would you even infect a computer where you could get to the bash or something?
So if it's internet facing, and you've left a port open so that they can communicate with your kernel, they can run this exploit. Now, most of us don't have that. So if you're behind a standard firewall, there are no open ports to the outside world unless you do something stupid and open up a port.
Like DMZ your whole network or something?
Right. But
We've talked about that.
Exactly. But, I mean, there's also, imagine this, a lot of these routers are facing the internet and they run Linux.
Oh, right.
So technically, I'm not saying I would do this, but if I were poking around, I would exploit like a DDWRT router that's using a Linux kernel. I would use the bash exploit to say, oh, by the way, let me peek into your network and see what else is in there. And now I've got everything.
Oh, man. Okay.
Kind of scary, right?
Thanks for telling me about this story.
Oh, by the way, there's no way to fix this, so sleep all the night.
I am unplugging everything.
Folks, that's what we do here on Know How. We make you afraid. Be afraid, be very afraid.
The more you know, the more scary.
Now, don't panic. Nobody should panic. But the National Foundation that looks at these exploits has rated this as a 10 out of 10. And in other words, they're saying this is now the scariest thing we've ever seen. It's not Heartbleed anymore. Heartbleed we can manage. This is... total access to everything you have.
Prevalent. Yeah, like you're saying, so many boxes that have different distros of Linux and other routers, servers.
Essentially, everybody can get owned except people who run Windows.
Who thought that would be possible?
No, I don't want to start this war. All right. So that's that. We had to mention it, but again, keep tuned, stay tuned. I'm sure that we're going to break it down. There's going to be a patch available for most devices. The biggest problem are the devices that are not patchable.
Unpatched.
That's going to be a problem.
Older systems, older hardware, stuff like that.
Yeah, and this is the scary part. With all these new exploits coming up, like bad USB and bash and Heartbleed, we're starting to realize that there's like a generation of devices that we owned that should never be turned on again.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they cannot be patched. They cannot be updated. They cannot be fixed. We just have to say, okay, well, those are done. We have to throw those away.
When those devices were even conceived, these sort of things weren't even on the radar. So...
yeah.
Ah, Jesus. I think that also means that you need to monitor, like the iGuardian that you talked about on Twiet. So these, whenever these things pop up, these vulnerabilities, I think it makes you have to take a closer look at what we can do to prevent them. Or so it just it makes security better.
Right.
In general, anyway.
And that's actually a very good point, because one of the things we're realizing is that we can't count on us being able to seal the bad guys out of our devices anymore. But what we can do is we can use products that let us examine the traffic so that we'll realize, oh, something got owned.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a traffic pattern that you'll see when there's a device that has been exploited and is now doing nefarious things.
Right.
If you look at that rather than hoping that your passwords and usernames are going to hold up, I think you have a better chance of actually...
Right, because when I hear stories like this, it's like I want to know how it works, and I want to know what I can do to protect myself, and that's why I use like LastPass, and I have different passwords now. Otherwise, like if I hadn't heard any of these stories, I'd probably still be using the same password with like one or two variants for like every website, like I used to when I was in high school. But my like security patterns have evolved as technology has. So
absolutely. So folks. Patch, patch, patch. Find the patch for your device and make sure it's updated. Make sure that you've got the latest firmware. Make sure that your operating system is running the latest version of that kernel. And within a week, I'm sure you'll be fine.
And then cry yourself to sleep.
And you'll cry. Yeah. But you know what doesn't make me cry?
What's that?
Knowledge.
Knowledge?
Knowledge.
Well, that's what we're all about here.
We're all about knowledge. In fact, you could say that we like to pour knowledge into the knowledge hole. That's right.
Those little crevices in
Those little crevices in the brain that just crave information. They crave new knowledge. And thankfully, we've got a sponsor of Know How who helps to fill the knowledge hole.
Lynda. Lynda.com.
Lynda.com. Now, what is Lynda.com, you may be asking yourself? Well, Lynda.com is the one-stop shop, the place you go on the internet to find anything about anything.
That's where I go to brush up on my Premiere stuff.
Right.
Because we're transferring to that soon.
And that's where I go anytime I need to look at, well, how does After Effects work? Because I haven't worked in After Effects for a long, long time. Lynda is sort of like not an online university. I don't want to call it that. It's an online repository of knowledge. And it's the breadth of knowledge that they have is just amazing. Lynda is the place where you want to go anytime you want to learn new skills, new features for your resume, or new pieces that you're going to use in your job. They are the one-stop shop for knowledge, and they're constantly improving their platform. They've got new features, new designs, and even better support. Now, as a special promotion for our Know How audience, they are they're making sure that you have the latest and the greatest, the things that you have to know immediately. They work directly with industry experts and software companies to provide timely training, often the same day, with new versions or releases that hit the market. So you're always up to speed. They're an easy, affordable way to help you learn. That's what we're talking about. You know, you want something that you're going to be able to go to, browse around, and say, wow, I never knew about that. Maybe I want to learn. Maybe I want to learn about Premiere. Maybe I want to learn about After Effects. Maybe I want to learn how to best use my GoPro. All courses are produced at the highest quality. These aren't like those homemade videos on YouTube, which I love. I mean, that's where I came from. But sometimes you want good lighting. Sometimes you want good audio. Sometimes you don't want the production to get in the way of learning, and that's what Lynda does. They include tools like searchable transcripts so that you can find specific parts of the videos and the lessons so that you can just learn the thing that you need at that moment. It's not always sitting down for a 30-minute lesson. Sometimes it's just, I forgot this one thing. Show me how to do it. Lynda.com can help. Now, whether you're a beginner or advanced, Lynda.com has courses for all experience levels. And you can learn while you're on the go with Lynda.com apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. They've got one low monthly price of $25, which gives you unlimited access to over 100,000 video tutorials. Premium members with an annual plan can download courses to their iPhone, iPads, or Androids and watch them online. Premium plan members can also download project files and practice along with the instructor. They also offer courses on simple Android development tools, practical cybersecurity, Monday productivity pointers, which, you know, sometimes I really need, and songwriting in Logic Pro. Now, for any software that you rely on, Lynda.com can help you stay current with all their updates and learn the ins and outs to be more efficient and more productive. We've got a special offer for you. If you think that maybe Lynda might be right for you to fill your knowledge hole, then you can access all their courses free for 7 days. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to try lynda.com free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of Know How.
Cool.
Boom. Now, shall we continue to fill the knowledge hole?
Yes.
Let's do it. Now, Brian, last time we talked about replacing or upgrading the memory in our Predator.
Right. So we did that, and we saw a little bit of an increase, but about, what was it, 8 gigs?
Yeah, well, so we went from 8 gigs up to 16 gigs up to 32 gigs.
And you won't notice much of a gain once you get
really
up to 32.
Not. I mean, the performance gain was between 1.6 for 32 gigs and something like, you know, 6 point something for 16 gigs. You actually, on the benchmark, you got more of a boost out of the 16 gig upgrade than you did out of the 32. And that's just because... remember, the way that memory works is it's got to refresh it. As you increase the amount of memory, it's actually taking more of your processing time in order to keep the memory updated.
To utilize it. But your recommendation was if you're doing a lot of video editing or something like that, then you would need that extra memory.
Exactly. And that wasn't the best test for what we're benchmarking this for. Which is gaming. So we are benchmarking for gaming. Productivity tools, unless you're doing video editing, aren't really going to stretch the boundaries of even 8 gigabytes of memory.
Right.
I mean, if you're video editing, more memory is better. Mm-hmm. But if you're gaming, 8 gigabytes is actually pretty dang good. It's so.
Especially, I think at that point, you're more worried about the speed of the RAM than it is the quantity.
Yeah. I mean, you want to be able to go through your RAM as fast as possible. You can do that really quickly with 8 gigabytes versus 32, which is what you would need if you had such large files that you didn't want to swap them out to the hard drive or the SSD.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think what we concluded was that. That's good. Upgrading memory is good.
Right.
But if you're looking for a performance system and you've already got 8 gigs, probably not the place that you're going to spend
your memory. So what's next for the best bang for buck?
The next that we're looking for the bang for the buck is the video card. So, I mean, if you go to my overhead, Alex. So, Brian, this is a gaming desktop. I mean, that's what it was built for. The Predator series from Acer is turnkey gaming. Nothing fancy in order to keep the price down, but it has a decent motherboard with 4 slots for memory, with a decent video card. This particular one was a GTX 660, optical drive, power supply that's just enough to power everything that's in the case.
Yeah, what is that set at, actually?
Yeah, so this is a 500-watt power supply.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, now, when we start looking at video cards, when we start looking at upgrades, I mean, there's...
Bigger is better.
Bigger is typically better. But specifically what you're looking for is you're looking for the type of processor. So, you know, the GTX series is really, really easy. The higher number you go, like GTX 280, GTX 770.
I think ATI has, like, gone back around against
it. It's gone back around, right. They've got a couple of different
naming conventions. I have the 6800 in my computer, and I think now, like, the newer ones are, like, 280 or something.
The 660 would beat the snot out of your 6800.
Appreciate it.
Right. And look, like, this one's a 285. So, I mean, yeah, this is actually
pretty
decent.
Look how beefy that is.
Yeah. But one of the important things, other than just the CPU, the GPU that's integrated onto the board, the graphics processing unit, is the amount of memory.
Right. Which is typically, I mean, for an expensive card, I've seen up to like four gigs or so. But what is this one running?
This one, I believe, is a 2 gigabyte. This is also 2 gigabytes. So this, the 280 is running with 2 gigabytes of, I think this was still GDDR4. And this one is upgraded to GDDR5.
Right.
The more memory that you have, the more textures that you can load, which means it's going to run faster because you're not swapping from it.
Yeah, like games where they have the compressed textures, you need the extra memory to do like the ultra high.
Exactly. So what we wanted to see is if we could get a bounce by replacing the video card in a PC that was already designed for gaming, although this is this is showing its age. Without being crazy and spending $500, $600, $800 on a new video card.
Right. Yeah. Which would be nearly the cost of the PC.
Exactly. So, Alex, why don't you show them how we're going to replace our video card.
In the last upgrade segment, we bumped the 8 gigabytes of system memory in our Acer Predator to 16 and 32 gigabytes of high-performance DDR3. We received a small bump in performance between 1.5 and 6.2%. We started with the memory because that's the easiest component to upgrade. It doesn't require new drivers, reinstallations, or power calculations. Now we're getting a little dirtier by replacing the video card. The first thing we need to do is to make sure that our system can actually support a new video card. Opening up the case, first look at the power supply. Your power supply needs to support the power requirements for all the components in your computer. Rotating hard drives typically draw a max of 10 watts. SSDs pull about 3 watts. Motherboards can pull about 40 watts for a mid-range model, while high-end motherboards can draw up to 80 watts.
Intel i3 to i7 CPUs will pull between 55 and 150 watts, while AMD CPUs draw between 65 and 125. Each stick of memory will pull about 3 watts and an optical drive about 30. Each fan in the case adds about 3 watts of load. The biggest power hog in a performance box is typically its video card. A high-end video card will demand up to 260 watts, while a top-end card can grab 350. That means that our Predator, with its i7 CPU, mid-range motherboard, 1TB hard drive, Blu-ray optical drive, 8GB of memory, high but not top-end GTX 660 video card, and 2 fans, will pull just under 450 watts. Our power supply can provide 500 watts, so we've got about a 50-watt surplus. Now we need to know how many PCI Express slots are available on the motherboard. As the Predator is a compact case, we pulled the existing GTX 660 to give us an unobstructed view of the motherboard. This required us to first unlock the rear video card bracket, remove the power cables, then trip the small plastic lever that locks the card into the existing PCI Express slot. With the card free, we had an unobstructed view of the motherboard. The Predator has one PCI Express X16 slot and 2 PCI Express X1 slots. The X refers to the number of lanes in each PCI Express expansion port. The higher the number of lanes, the more data packets can be transmitted simultaneously. PCI Express slots can have 1, 2, 4, 8, 12, 16, and 32 lanes, with 1 and 16 being the most common. You can tell how many lanes a PCI Express slot has by looking at the size. Each lane adds 4 wires to the slot. Video cards work best when you give them PCI Express X16 slots. You could run a video card on an X1 slot, but as your goal is to go faster and not to cripple your brand new and probably extremely expensive upgrade, that would be stupid. More importantly, with only one PCI Express X16 slot, we can't run more than one video card in the Predator. Since we'll have to replace the existing card, which we estimated could pull 260 watts in the worst-case scenario, we've got a 310-watt power budget for a card that fits in our PCI Express X16 slot. In other words, the sky is the limit. But we didn't go with the sky, because that would have been crazy expensive, and we're all about bang for the buck. As we mentioned in the last segment, a GTX 660 isn't a slow card, it's just a bit dated. We decided to go with a GTX 770 upgrade. Why? Because a superclocked version can be had for about $330, while a superclocked GTX 780 would run $200 more. Also, there was one in Alex's desktop computer, so we stole it for the test. We slotted the 770 into the Predator, secured it, reattached the power cables, and powered it back on. Since we were previously using an NVIDIA card, we didn't need to reinstall drivers. But if you're installing a new graphics part for the first time, you may need some driver work. We kicked off PC Mark 8 and ran a benchmark. From the previous segment, we knew that the baseline Predator with a 660 scored 3924. With the 770 upgrade, but the same memory and hard drive, our Predator scored 4229. That's an increase of 7.8% or 0.024% performance boost per dollar spent. In other words, strictly judging by benchmarks, it's more bang for the buck than a 32GB memory upgrade.
Oh, we'd like to thank Alex
for RTD, generously for donating.
Yeah, for donating his video card out of his computer. Alex, so how's your computer working now?
Well, I wasn't booting up this morning. I was wondering why.
That's strange.
Yeah, I was working kind of late.
It must have just been a coincidence.
A gremlin in there or something.
Oh, we've also got a bunch of 780s downstairs, which are essentially two 770s stuck together.
Sandwiched.
Sandwiched together, which I'd really like to try those out, but Alex keeps them locked up.
Oh, for good reason, because we scavenge.
So be gone.
But then there's also SLI, which is where you can use two cards simultaneously.
Right. Which is why we did the whole taking the card out thing, because we, you know, especially for people who don't have the manuals or maybe aren't that computer savvy. I mean, there were people in the chat room who were saying, wait a minute, you need a step-by-step for taking out your video card. Some people do need a step-by-step, and there's no shame in that. But you need to look at the motherboard because that will tell you what your capabilities are. Mm-hmm. If you've only got one PCI Express 16 slot, then there's no reason for you to think about SLI because you can't do it.
Right.
Now, there are systems where people will use these adapter cables to go from like an X1 slot to an X16 so they can hook up a second or third or fourth video card.
Mm-hmm.
But that's usually when they're trying to make like a Bitcoin miner because you don't need all that capacity. You don't need all the transfer. You just need it to crunch numbers for you.
Yep. And we know a little bit about that.
And we know.
We've seen a couple of melted cards from that. Yeah. Not that we were responsible for it.
Oh, by the way, so I had one of those plugged in at home, and it did the same thing. The heat sink just popped.
That same card. Yeah, is that little ATI card?
ATI. Yeah. Evidently, they get really hot when you try to mine with them.
I don't think that's what their intended use was. It was like basic desktop graphics.
I gotta bring that thing in though, because just to watch the heat sink. I want to put like a time lapse GoPro on it
and
because
see it.
The pressure inside actually bends the aluminum to the point where it snaps.
It was
off.
Pretty crazy looking. Yeah. I'd never seen a heat sink do that before.
No. Now, speaking of sinks, you know, sometimes you need to sink a new idea into the internet, right?
That's right.
That's what you do. Just plant it, and you hope that it grows. But the internet is all about location. It's location, location, location. That hasn't changed. Nope. If you have a great idea, a great project, a great portfolio, but you don't put it in the right place, well, no one's going to see it. And it won't grow.
I feel like you might be talking about Squarespace.
Maybe I am. Squarespace, yeah, absolutely.
The hard part for me is coming up with the ideas, but Squarespace has made it really easy for posting stuff.
And that's the whole idea. Squarespace is for the people. You know, if you're a super programmer, if you control everything on your own, if you run a data center in your backyard for fun, then Squarespace isn't probably for you because you're going to always want it to do things your way. But if you're one of these people who has a great idea, who has a great portfolio, who is a photographer or a videographer, and you want to show off your work, you don't want to spend all your energy, all your creativity, and all your resources on setting up your server. That means registering your domain, making sure you've got the back ends, rent it out from someone, and then making sure that the front end looks the way that you want it to look.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of you can customize a lot of stuff for it.
Exactly. With Squarespace, you get to customize all that without having to be a programmer or an engineer or a designer or an administrator. You have a one-stop shop to grow your internet idea. Now, Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. As a special promotion for our audience, they're also giving away a full year of its most premium level service, valued at more than $288, to a randomly selected listener. That's right, folks, contest time. Just tweet Better Websites for All with hashtag Squarespace /knowhow to be considered. If you currently have a Squarespace site, then post your site URL too, and we may talk about it in a future episode. Now, I have used Squarespace in the past because I'm always setting up sites for organizations in my larger organization that aren't that tech savvy. Squarespace is perfect for them. They have the ideas. They have the content. Squarespace gives them the forum. They're constantly improving their platform. They've got new features, new designs, even better support, and beautiful designs. 25 templates for you to start with. And they've recently added a logo creator, which is a basic tool for individuals. And yeah, exactly. Because it's a good way to create your brand. Why have to pay thousands or tens of thousands of dollars for a logo when you're just starting out, when you can use their logo creator tool to make an identifiable symbol that says, this is me. They're also easy to use. And if you want some help, Squarespace has live chat. You're not going to need them, but they're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, there's a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles and video workshops. They also include e-commerce for sites that are able to support it, which is great if you want to accept donations, or if you're a nonprofit, if you've got a cash wedding registry, or just for school fund drives. Starting at just $8 a month, Squarespace is not going to break the bank, and they include a free domain name if you sign up for a year. One of my favorite things about Squarespace is that they're mobile ready. Your site may look like just horrible, horrible, bad stuff if you design it for a desktop and then someone tries to look at it on a phone. Well, that's not going to happen with the Squarespace template because it automatically adjusts for whatever the user is looking at your content with. iPhone? Sure. Android device? Of course. Tablet? Yeah. How about a big screen TV? Squarespace will automatically adjust the content to look as good as it possibly can. Now, even their code is beautiful. We all know that Squarespace looks nice on the outside, but I'm a coder. And when I look inside, when I actually look at the code that it generates, I know that they know what they're doing. Now, Squarespace includes hosting, so again, one-stop shop. You don't have to worry about that after setting up your domain and all your content options. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to start a free 2-week trial with no credit card and start building your website now. Get your idea out there. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code KNOWHOW to get 10% off and to show your support for KNOWHOW. We thank Squarespace for their support of Know How. A better web awaits. And it starts with your new Squarespace website. Boom.
Boom. And I like to tinker a lot with it. So it's got all the options for changing colors and the logo and everything.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Now, I just want to do a few real quick feedback items before we get to your Moto 360, because that's actually cool. The first one actually comes to us from Ian Trelevian.
Trelevian? Isn't that
Ian, I'm sorry, we're totally...
No, wow. It's Trevelyan.
Wow. Okay, geek points for that. Alex, if you go ahead and pull up that link, what he asked is, he said, Father Robert, could you tell us about your home network? I heard you say once that every person device gets their own VLAN. What's your preferred setup for a home network? Well, Ian, actually, that's a really good question, and I love showing off my network because I'm very proud of it. It all starts with this. This is an Enterasys D2. This is an enterprise-class switch. It's going to cost you between $1,000 to $2,000. So.
As soon as I heard enterprise class switch.
Yeah, it's pricey. So
I saw like money signs coming down. Signs. Yeah.
Don't do it.
He was pushing the button.
So we've got 12 ports, all gigabit, all PoE, so they can push out power to support other devices. Plus, got the two SFPs so I can connect to my fiber backbone. But more important than what it connects to, this thing has policy built into it. So I was able to program this. This is actually my backup switch. I was able to program it so that it would automatically create a new VLAN for any device that attempts to connect to the network.
Okay.
And we know from way, way long ago that a VLAN creates like a virtual network. It's that device can only see anything else that's also on the same VLAN.
So it's like compartmentalization?
Compartmentalization.
Whatever the Titanic has. Yeah,
it's the Titanicism.
Don't get an iceberg.
That worked out great for them.
It was a good idea in theory, Alex. We're talking about engineering here. This is geek stuff. Oh, but seriously, the idea of when a new device comes into the network, it can't just see everything on the network, because that's crazy insecure. If someone who has malicious intent plugs into your network, you don't want them to have the keys to the kingdom, which is what they would have. So instead, what mine does is every time a new device plugs in, it gets a VLAN on what I call the untrusted subnet. Mm-hmm. All that those computers on the untrusted subnet can do is see the gateway, and they can access the internet at a greatly reduced speed.
But they don't see anything else on the network.
They see nothing else on the network. In fact, if you have 2 or 3 or 10 different computers on the untrusted subnet, they can't even see each other. All they can see is the gateway that gets them out to the internet.
Can you only do this sort of setup with enterprise hardware?
No. You can do this with, like, the DDWRT. You can do it on your own. The problem is it's a pain in the butt to configure all that because you have to do it manually. Something like this, I can make a policy.
Every new connection gets its own instead of... Okay.
Right. So I've said, okay, VLANs X through Y are all untrusted. Anytime a new device comes in, give it one of those.
Okay.
Right. Now... It goes a layer up because this is actually my authentication server. So what?
Authentication server?
This is actually my backup authentication server. It allows me to use 802.1x to give a certificate to any computer. It's an encryption certificate, right? So it says this is unique to you, which means that no one else on the network is going to be able to listen in on you. And it also means that this tells me whether or not a computer should be moved from the untrusted subnet to the trusted subnet.
How under what parameters?
Your username and your password.
Oh, okay.
And your MAC address. It actually looks at your MAC address and says, "Is this one of the devices that's trusted?"
Right. Okay.
Once you move into the trusted subnet, you still get your own VLAN, but now you can see the storage servers. Now you can see the printers. Now you can see like the entertainment devices. Everything that's a shared resource.
Okay.
Now here's the magic. This is the part that I really like. This was a lot of fun, and you really can only do this with an enterprise class switch. Because it would be too much of a pain in the butt to do it on a consumer switch.
All right.
If I have one device that wants to talk to another device, and that happens all the time, I transfer files, right?
Yeah.
Because they're on their own VLANs, they can't. But what will happen is the gateway will see it, the switch will see it, and say, oh, you want to talk to this device.
Right.
It will check with the authentication server to say, should this device be able to talk to this device? If the authentication server says yes, it creates a new VLAN that encompasses both of them, and now they can talk.
And it does that on the fly?
It does it on the fly. And then when the conversation's over, it destroys that VLAN so that communication link is broken.
And then it's separated again.
Right. This is my added protection. It means that even if I have a computer that gets owned.
Right.
Let's say I, you know, my mom comes in and she decides that she wants to look at cats on that really weird Russian website.
Typical mom.
Typical mom. She will be able to establish a connection, but then the switch is actually looking for behavior. It's like that iGuardian. It's looking for that, oh, wait a minute. Why are you all of a sudden contacting these IRC servers out in the world? And why is there so much traffic? And it will re-isolate her, and it will tell me, I think this computer is owned. I'm going to isolate it so that it can infect anything else.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It does take a lot of doing.
Yeah, so how long? I mean, this is obviously something that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
You've done a lot. So how long would this take someone to set up a network? Like, I mean, depending on, I guess it would depend on the number of devices, but
yeah.
If you were going to say you were doing it at someone's house and they had like three computers on the network, how long would it take you to set all this up?
So depending on how comfortable you are with driving the CLI, the command line interface for a particular switch, you could probably get a Cisco switch that does much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like this because it's super quiet. There's no fan in there. It's dead quiet. Like
a day?
Months.
Really?
It would take, unless you really, really knew it, it's going to take a while to develop these policies. That's why I like the InteraSys.
Mm-hmm.
It's not built on like access levels. It's built on policy. You can write the policy and it will implement policy for you.
I guess I'm looking forward to when this enterprise level of security is kind of just like a household thing.
It really
should
be.
Sounds like we need after the first story that we listened to.
I know.
So products like the iGuardian are pretty cool.
Right.
But I'm expecting they'll probably become more prevalent and easier to use, I hope.
I'd say so. I'd hope so.
Yeah.
Let's do one more feedback real quick. We've got a question here from Stephen Stewart. Alex, if you go ahead and pull up his link here. He writes, I have heard a great many things regarding the infinite powers of an SSD.
Ah, yes.
I was wondering if I could use an SSD as the source drive of my media server in place of a RAID. My theory is that an SSD would not fail as often as a hard disk drive and would last forever if I'm only reading a static list of movie files. Obviously, if money were no object, because they ain't cheap. Steven, great question, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the money thing is the dividing point there.
But not so much anymore. I mean, 5 years ago, it was crazy. And 60 gigabyte, this
That's
SSD,
true.
This was the first SSD that was manufactured for commercial use. This is a Samsung. This was 60 gigabytes. This cost over $1,000.
And what is 60 gigabytes?
And
SSD
now something like this, which is a 240 gigabyte drive, will cost you like 100. So, yeah, they're coming way, way down. But as to his question, he wanted to know, well, could I use it as a media server drive? And specifically, a place where he could put a bunch of media files and then just read them.
Right.
And
Do you need the speed, really, that an SSD provides for that?
It depends how many streams you're pulling simultaneously.
So
what I'm thinking, he's probably creating like an entertainment center where several dozens, hundreds, I don't know, thousands of people could be pulling from the same file. And if you're using a standard RAID, that's going to start to choke. SSD is crazy fast. And here's the thing that he actually made a reference to. SSDs only get, quote unquote, used up when you write.
Right, because they have a limited number of times that you can read write to them.
Right. Well, you can read an unlimited number of times.
Right.
Because
that's why you don't want to defrag an SSD.
It's
right?
a horrible idea. Unless you're like doing a low level error check. But the way that SSDs work is there's actually a memory cell. That memory cell has like a little insulator, and you have to push electrons past the insulator in order to charge the cell. And once the cell is charged, it counts as a one. Right.
And that's how we do.
Right.
One zeros.
So the process of charging the cell actually kind of burns away some of the insulation. So after time, you can't really charge it anymore. It won't work, which is why it has a limited number of writes. But as far as reads are concerned, you could do it forever. It only uses up the lifespan of an SSD when you're writing. So a media server would be a great use for an SSD because you're not going to erase all those files. You're not going to recopy the files. You're just going to read them for the life of the SSD.
Now, I do remember you talking to Steve Gibson about memory leak.
Yeah.
Wasn't it that SSDs over time start to lose?
Over time, they start to lose. And then what you do is you need to run a utility that will basically do like a check. It will say, okay, well, you're on. Let's make sure you're on. You're off. Let's make sure you're off. And it kind of just resets the parameters.
Okay.
Because remember, so if off is no charge and on is a certain level of charge, after an amount of time, the charge actually starts to leak out of the cell. But right. we're talking a long, long time.
Right. Because the point I'm trying to figure out is, reliability-wise and longevity-wise, is an SSD compared to, like, a platter-spinning hard drive?
Technically, yes. So on paper, it is, yes. From practical experience, I have had dozens, if not hundreds, of hard drives fail on me. Mm-hmm. I've never had an SSD fail on me.
Unless you buy a cheap one.
Well, even if I buy a cheap one. Like, this is a cheapy one. This is a Samsung 470, something like that. It's an old one. Uh-huh. This started to lose performance almost immediately. But even though it was losing performance for writes, it never lost performance for reads, and lost data.
Okay. Then, yeah, that would be if money is not really an object, and you, I guess if you have like a terabyte of video footage that you're using, you know, but
Do it. All right, Brian, let's get past the feedback because I want to see this. You have figured out how to create a custom watch face on a Moto 360.
Well, yeah, I've been playing around with the Moto 360 a lot. Google has had a few different watches. There's the LG watch and the Samsung watch, but the one I got excited about was the one from Motorola, and because it's round. It's a cool-looking watch. I'm used to wearing a watch. It's not much bigger than my other one, but there weren't like easy ways. You can't just customize the face.
Right.
You have to download an app.
Yeah, so it's not like just like uploading. Oh, I'm gonna have a new picture that is my background.
Right,
you just,
right.
You can't
right.
do that.
So there's an app in the Play Store for 99 cents called Facer, and what it's actually, I thought you would be able to design on your computer and then upload it to your phone, or which you can kind of, but you actually design it all through your phone, and once you kind of wrap your head around it's like using Photoshop where you have layers to do. But if you
it's
roll
like
the video, Alex. I'll kind of narrate as it goes. I did some B-roll so I could get some close-ups. But here's the Moto 360 with my Moto X that I use as my daily driver. But here's the Facer for Android Wear app, 99 cents. And once you have it installed and you bring it up, they actually have... These are my watch faces that I have, but they also have a featured list where people...
Wait, Twit watch face?
Well, that's the one I made. They have featured watch faces that people upload to the server, and you can download those ones if you want. But if you want to get, you know, do the customization and make a Twit watch, I did this in about 15 minutes, so it's not the best watch.
Wait, you did this all on the phone?
You do it all on the phone.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So whatever image you want to use, if you have it on the phone, what I had done is gone through Chrome and downloaded a Twit logo. And so that was already saved to my phone. But, yeah, I just go to my gallery, go to my download folder. There's quite a few pictures in there. And then you scale it to how you want. If you wanted to make a custom image and make it fit, I believe the dimensions are, it's like 320 by 320, I think is the ideal image size. I'll have to double check that. But you can enlarge or shrink and then shift the image on the X and Y axis. So it's not super intuitive, but it does allow you to move it around to your preferences.
Yeah. If you've ever had to like clip an image for your social media mm-hmm. account, you'll this is kind of a clunky version of that.
Exactly. But that was the first thing that kind of confused me, is that I was doing this all on the phone. But so then the next layer, if you want to add, you know, the time, obviously, because it's a watch.
Get a watch.
These are the codes.
Nice.
And there's a description in the middle, which isn't 100% clear. Some of them are a little confusing. But if you look off into the right-hand column, that shows you what it's going to output. So I want the hour of the day in 12-hour a.m., p.m. terms. You know, I don't want the 24-hour clock. So the code for that is like hashtag DH capital Z hashtag. And so that goes up into the top there. And so if you want to put like a colon between, you know, the hour mark and then the minutes, you type it in there. Or you want to put a space, or you want to put any other kind of other character, you can just type it in there.
So it's like a custom markup language, basically.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And the closure is that like hashtag for the code. So now I've got, you know, at the end there, hashtag DMZ hashtag, which is the minutes. So I've got the hour and then the minutes. And it's hard to see in the video there, but I have to enlarge it.
That's actually kind of cool.
And so, yeah, this allows for a lot of...
You should be able to drag it into place.
That's kind of annoying. It's still pretty new. The Moto 360, this is the first generation. This is all the first generation stuff for watches and everything. So people are still kind of writing apps and things for it. But this was the best one I found that allowed me to kind of do what I wanted to do. So you can bold the text, and I'm going to switch it to white because the background that I'm using will let me see it a little bit better. And then I'm just going to kind of align it to where I want it. And at the top, there's the little layer section. So you can tap that to see, okay, that's what it looks like on the watch face. That's what it looks like just on the layer that I have selected. I go back. And I don't want to just stop at doing the time. I want to know what the date is also. So this is where you can add shapes. And you can also edit the shapes on the fly. So I'm going to do, I want to add the date to it. So I'm going to add a little square. And I'm going to adjust it so that when I put text over it, it kind of highlights it. You know, it looks more like you would see on a watch with like a little square that has the date on
it. You really get to be your own little watch designer with this.
You do. I mean, there are limitations to it, but once you kind of wrap your head around it and if you design your own custom background and you understand how this app works, you can kind of fit things in the way you want. Yeah. And you can upload custom watch hands and stuff, too. So there's, like, in the featured apps, there's so many cool ones that people have done. But, like, here I'm going to add the date. So I go in back into the hashtag hashtag stuff and scroll down to find... Because you can do the day of the year, which isn't really helpful to me. So I did that by accident.
How do you know? Maybe you want that.
I just want the day of the month. Dude, I have a hard enough time remembering what day it is anyway. So I did the month in text. So it'll say September. And then I want the day that it is of the month. And so that's what the little code at the top is. And you go back. And then you can just, you adjust it again on the X and Y axis.
You know, this is definitely like first version of the software. Eventually it's going to get much more user friendly. This is more like a developer interface right now.
It is, but I liked it.
I like it. But you know what I like about this? Everyone has complained about UI. Oh, this is stupid. Why would you put that there? This should be... Now you can actually design your own. And it will probably make you respect designers more because...
It does.
There's a fine balance between putting as much data on the screen as possible and making the screen something you want to actually look at.
Because, you know, in my mind, I'm like, oh, you know, I got this.
Everything.
Like, this is going to be such a cool watch face. And then I sit down and I try and design it. I'm like, oh, this is really hard. But so this took me about, you know, 15 minutes or maybe even less. And so this is the part that is pretty slick also, is that... Once you have Facer installed on the phone, it'll be seen on your Android Wear device. There's my Secret Agent one from
nice.
GoldenEye. But yeah, then you tap the sync with... That's actually my old watch that I did, which was bad. But you tap at the top to sync with your device,
that's
and it just shoots
one.
It over. And now,
very cool.
And you're good to go. You got your own little custom watch face.
I have to say, at first I didn't get it. I don't like watches. I don't like wearables. But after seeing you and Jason use the 360 for, what has it been, 2 weeks now?
Yeah, about that.
I'm
this
kinda
one
want
I like
one.
A lot. This was one that somebody had custom made with the custom hands and stuff. But I mean, it's not too difficult to do, and you just send it over. But yeah, it's fun to play with. I tried explaining to my significant other why I got this,
why I
spent $250 on basically just a screen on my wrist.
You know, and you tell him, look, this is me accessorizing.
Yes.
Okay, these are all the accessories I will ever need. Right. Sometimes I'm feeling Secret Agent-y, sometimes
yes.
I'm feeling Twitty.
Exactly.
What?
Yeah, and yeah, like with Android and just in general, I like tweaking with it and making it look the way I want. But the way I partially justified it was I've owned a watch for 4 years. I spent $100 on it. It was the first watch I ever owned. I needed a new watch.
Yeah.
I waited for this
And you know what?
One.
You deserved a new watch. Yeah. Let's be honest. All right, that was called Facer?
That is called Facer. It's 99 cents in the Play Store. Yeah.
Not bad.
But so...
Well,
so
if you've already paid $340 for a Moto 360, you're going to pay 99 cents for the app that lets you customize
it. $250. I didn't pay that
okay,
much.
Sure. Well, I get the more expensive one because, you know, I'm higher class.
Maybe you don't want to spend that much on a watch. Maybe you're more of a do-it-yourselfer like we have been from time to time. There's a project that I actually asked Tony to buy the parts for me just yesterday from Adafruit, and it's a do-it-yourself watch.
Okay, now this is what
I wear. And this one is
$40. This is me because I am low class.
So this is a fun project that we'll be doing where you build it yourself. It's $40. It'll just take probably a weekend of soldering and figuring out how to do. And you'll have a wearable.
I mean, I don't wear watches, but I would wear that just because it screams geek.
I like that stuff.
I like it.
I mean, the last thing was the little pendant with the...
Right,
Dot Gobbler.
It's not Pac-Man.
Not Pac-Man.
We are legally unbound from saying Pac-Man.
So I figured I should give another wearable a shot now that I've been using this day-to-day.
Well, thank you, Brian. Mm-hmm. Can I see that for a sec?
No.
Oh, dang.
This is mine.
Well, folks, we know this was a lot of information for you to take at once. The upgrade, the notes about Bash, the trying to program your Moto 360. So we've made it easy for you to follow along with any of our projects. All you have to do is go to our show page and check out our show notes. And, Brian, where can they find our show page?
Those live at twit.tv/KH. And not only are our show notes there, but every past episode we've done. And if you want to search through maybe part one of Linux that we had, you can find it there. Like last week we did the NFC tags, fixing Wi-Fi, the beginning of the PC upgrade stuff. So you're going to want to go back and make sure.
So, yeah, exactly. Especially when we start doing these arcs.
Yes.
If you miss part of the PC upgrade, it's not going to make sense. You've got to see the whole series.
That's right.
Yeah. Don't forget that you can also find us on Google+. We've got a very vibrant Google+ community. Just jump over to G+ and look for know-how. There's only one know-how on all of Google+. And find out what our community is talking about. In fact, we take a lot of feedback from this group, and we use it in the show. If you've got a project you're thinking about, if you've got a project you want us to do, or if you've got the knowledge to contribute to other people's questions, make sure that you join and be part of the know-it-alls.
Well, there's only so much talent that we have, you know, and there's a lot of talented people out there that do projects that we've done, and they do them better.
It's humbling to see them.
It's fun to see them. I like looking at the projects.
Oh, you should be doing this show. You're so much better than I am. Don't forget, if you don't have G+, or if you're not into the whole Google groove, you can also find us on Twitter. Make sure you follow us so you can find out what we're doing each week. And also just converse with us in between our shows, because we do a lot here on the Twit TV network. Yeah. Where do they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @cranky_hippo.
That's right. And you'll find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's at PadreSJ. That's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, and if you do follow us on Twitter or on Google+, you'll find out that Leo found the no-hole.
He did. I know. When he posted that picture, I was like, no! Don't go down there! Yeah, the first
thing... looks like people are living down here.
The first thing he said to me, he goes, so, Robert... Have you moved in to the studio?
It's just the beanbags give it that look.
It's the beanbag and the refrigerator and the...
We need snacks.
And the laundry.
We need a place to do our projects. And the laundry. The Xbox.
Microwave, the Xbox. The carpet. The carpet probably was a big one. My bathrobe, I think, was a big... A big tip off.
The sauna that you made, too. Yeah.
Actually, it is kind of a sauna down there. Well, folks, that's all we've got for this episode of Know How. Join us next week where we're going to be finishing up our project upgrade. That's right. We're going to be upgrading the hard drive in our Acer Predator to an SSD. I know there are a lot of you who are hoping for a big performance jump. Let's see if that happens. And I think next week we're also going to be finding our first segment on Destiny. You've heard about it. Is it worth the hype? I don't know. Our game man is going to bring you the latest.
I put the hours in to find out.
Yes, he has. Till next time, I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go do it.